listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour,
the home of cycling with character.
Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run. Stage 16. Today we are in La Cubilla.
Where are we, Daniel?
We're in the press room at the Bouncy Castle. But what do you think of these Bouncy Castles? I think they're brilliant. I think they're the future. Have you talked about this on the podcast?
No, it's incredible structure, isn't it? Javier Guillen yesterday said he wanted maybe a bit less red at the Vuelta, but here in this very remote spot, miles from anywhere, is this enormous. Yeah, it looks like a Bouncy Castle, and it's bright red.
Or a giant Haribo.
Yeah.
Like a napalm-sized
Haribo. It's new, isn't it?
Yeah, napalm-sized Haribo sweet.
He hasn't been eating dried ether, did he?
No, I don't know, he might do.
But more seriously, Daniel, we've just driven up this extraordinary climb that the Vuelta's never been up before. And I've been blown away by it. It's on a different scale to... I mean, yesterday, they felt like a mini mountains. These are proper... We'd driven up a long, long way when we came to the 10 kilometres to go banner. And it's really rocky and... kind of more like an alpine climb than a climb you'd find in Asturias.
Well, it's known as the Asturian Galibier, this climb, Rich. And actually, particularly the bit near the top last couple of kilometres, it really reminds me of the bit of the top of the Galibier from the Valois side, so above Plan Lachat, which is where the Galibier really gets difficult. The way it sort of curves around the kind of rock walls, it's quite reminiscent of that, I thought.
We should say what it's called. It's the Alto de la Cubilla.
Cubilla, yeah.
Cubilla. And why has the Vuelta never been up here, do you know?
Well, I don't know. You spoke to Javier again yesterday.
But it's amazing that the Vuelta keeps discovering these new climbs, which they're not difficult to spot.
They're not difficult to spot, but I think, historically, the Vuelta has had far fewer additions than the other two Grand Tours. It also wasn't that mountainous until quite recently. It wasn't really very mountainous until the 80s. Very often... The Vuelta didn't go much above 1500 metres, and that was partly to do with the time of the year that it was ridden. It was ridden in the spring, and a lot of these bigger climbs, I've just been bitten, I think, a lot of these big climbs were still snowbound at that time.
It's amazing and exciting and unknown, I suppose, for the riders. I wonder if any of them have even recce'd it.
You have some of the Spanish riders, particularly the Asturian riders, like Dani Navarro, for example, an Asturian rider. I'm sure he will know it. The Vuelta a Asturias has sort of nibbled around the edges of this climb and done sort of variations of it from one side, I think. But no, the Vuelta a España has certainly never been up here.
Well, the stage is still unfolding. Big day today. We think we've just found an off-road route to León. Got a big drive after. Are we gonna risk it, Daniel?
Yeah, we're gonna go Juice of Hazard. I've just been summoned. I need to go up the mountain. The bus has been laid on to go the last 2 kilometres back up the mountain to the finish. So I need to go, Rich. Sorry.
I'll see you there, and I'll see you off-road later.
The fastest clothing in the world tour,
the home of cycling with character.
Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019. As they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run.
In my bib shorts, I tend to look for a lot of padding. I'm Logan Owen, and I'm a cyclist for EF Education First Pro Cycling Team. Usually with a lot of padding comes a lot of comfort, and the Rafa bib shorts do a good job of having good padding and create a lot of comfort. So far, the best bib shorts I've ridden up to this point in my career of cycling. So yeah, it's been a real comfy year.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our title sponsor. Very grateful to them, of course, as ever. And a reminder that you can follow all the EF Gone Racing films at rafa.cc or on Rafa's YouTube channel. Lots to watch there, and very entertaining they are, a lot of them, covering both the sort of conventional World Tour races and the alternative calendar. Those films tend to be a little bit longer. Now, this morning at the start, I spoke to a couple of Team Ineos riders, Theo Gegenhart, who was third yesterday and a little bit unhappy, it seemed, at the finish. Third is decent. He's obviously had a tough opening to the race, not as high up on GC as he would have liked, but he's trying hard for a stage win, and he's up there in the break once again today, as is our audio diarist James Knox, with a lot of De Koon and Quickstep teammates. So that augurs well for his diary, if nothing else. Who knows what's going to happen in the stage? I spoke to Theo this morning about yesterday's stage, and also spoke to his teammate Owain Doull, who's riding his first Grand Tour. I hadn't spoken to him yet, so thought I would find out how he's getting on. So let's hear first from Theo, and then from Owain Doull. A bit disappointed at the finish yesterday?
Yeah, I don't know. Just is what it is, really. Yeah, I think I probably would have raced it differently, but yeah, I don't know. Sepp was also super, super strong. I think you've seen that even in the time he did would have been fifth or sixth in the GC group. So yeah, I don't know how much difference it would have made, really. I know how he's going at the moment, and yeah, is what it is.
What would you have done differently, do you think?
Yeah, just maybe been more aggressive at the bottom of the climb, and then tried to stay with him and tried to pace it a little bit more, which was good certainly for the group I ended up in the middle of the climb. But then we hit there was a bit of a flat section through the trees about a kilometre or so, and yeah, the race disappeared in that section, really. So I think Sepp took a lot of time there when everyone was looking at each other still, and yeah, it was gone.
Nevertheless, do you reflect on third on a very hard stage of the Vuelta with a bit of satisfaction?
Yeah, I guess so, but the objective's to win, so try again today.
Are you going to try again today?
Yeah, why not? Rest day tomorrow, and then a steadier, very long stage after that. So yeah, I felt good yesterday. I don't think I'm necessarily at my best, but the power's really good, just maybe not quite as light as I've been in the past. But yeah, I was good in the start. Soler attacked real big, and I think three of us went over the first climb clear of the bunch, and then obviously a lot of guys came across in the next valley. But yeah, why not? I think it'll be a bit more tricky today, 50k more or less flat, so I don't know, we'll see what happens.
How's it going? I mean, we're into the third week now with the rest day the way it is. How are you finding your first Grand Tour?
Yeah, it's been good so far. I guess for me, I've been fortunate, maybe not so much for the team, that obviously Theo and Wout came here with GC ambitions and didn't really materialise. But it means, yeah, for me personally, I haven't had that much to do. And the team said, you know, in the first 9 days, just do what you want, kind of try and save as much as possible and see how you end up in the second, third week. And yeah, so far I feel pretty good, actually.
What would you say you're learning from it?
Yeah, I've learned a few things, actually. Like, I spoke to Luke Rowe quite a lot before starting here, and he gave me a few tips, and one of them was never to actually go full gas on any days, because I think once you go fully into the red like that, you can do a lot of damage. So most days, when there's a decent group forming, kind of sit up, save myself, and I actually feel better than I have in a lot of races. So yeah, just little things, managing stuff, also just kind of getting into good habits. I think in week-long stage races, 9-day stage races, stuff like that, you can kind of get away with, you know, if it's a late transfer, you go back to the room, you want to watch a bit of Netflix, chill out a bit, and you got a bit late, you can get away with it. But here it's just the consistency of the racing and everything, so just kind of, yeah, good habits, getting to bed every night, make sure you get enough sleep, just managing your efforts, and just, yeah, being a bit smart about things.
There isn't a lot in the Vuelta for riders like you, but are there any stages that you've looked at and maybe, you know, having conserved up till now, have a wee go?
Pretty much every stage now till Madrid, I'll try and get up the road. You know, it's not necessary to say any of the stages really suit me, but like yesterday with Theo in the break and Kiri was up there, you know, just kind of play a team role. And again, to learn, you know, Nico said, even if you get up the road on a really hard day, which doesn't suit you at all, it's still good for the future. You know, there'll be scenarios where hopefully we'll be in Grand Tours with a big leader, and you know, if you're in the front, you can kind of learn how the brake race in the front. They'll probably push more on the climbs and go easy on the flat, whereas you do the opposite in the peloton, so you can kind of learn to how to predict what the brake you're going to do as well. So yeah, I guess just a big learning experience for me.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Thanks to Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour at the Tour de France, interrupting our Vuelta coverage to remind us to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Lacca, bicycle insurance powered by the community. Let's hear from Jens, one of the three co-founders of Lacca, about their model of insurance.
From the outset, we wanted to create a better way for cyclists to insure their bikes and gear. When we looked at traditional insurance, it got clear that insurance is a fantastic business model for the shareholder, but not the customer. With Lacca, we created a simple community-based model for bicycle insurance. We help our members when their bike is damaged or stolen and share the cost at the end of the month with the community. For every claim, we charge a small fee to the community. This way, the community is directly rewarded for taking care, and we only make money when we are really needed. It helps us to really focus on you as a cyclist and when you need our help the most.
If you want to check out Lacquer and perhaps sign up to cover your bikes and equipment, go to lacquer.co.uk. That's Lacquer, spelled L-A-K-A. Lacquer covers your bikes and equipment for theft and damage at home and abroad, and even covers you for sportives and races, as long as you're not a professional rider. Lacquer says that to cover around £2,000 worth of gear, it should cost about £8 per month, with fees capped, so that you should never pay more than £17 a month for that level of cover. So if that sounds like the sort of insurance you'd like, check out Lacquer at lacquer.co.uk.
Where are we, Daniel?
We're in Plaza Mayor in León.
Been a long day, hasn't it? We had to drive almost 2 hours here from the...
Some of us did.
So you took the dirt road?
I off-roaded. It was gripped. I learned today the Fast Show is 25 years old. Yeah, you didn't watch the Fast Show, did you?
What's that got to do with you taking the dirt road?
Well, because it was a sketch, Richard, and the off-roaders, a recurring sketch in the Fast Show. And the catchphrase in it was, it's gripped, let's off-road. Anyway, that's what I did. Opinion was split over whether it would be a wise decision. Do you know what, who cast the deciding vote? Chris Anker Sorensen.
Who's a listener. I saw him there.
Who told me tonight he listens to the podcast. No. Yeah, he does, yeah.
And what, he said go for it?
Well, he was going for it. He was well up for it. He was psyched. So
it was risky. So I heard there were two rivers.
Yeah, we crossed two rivers. Have you ever seen the film Romancing the Stone? It was a bit like that.
Oh, wow. I didn't want to risk my Skoda on that road. So I took a longer route, but we got here about the same time, so all's well. We heard just before the break there...
You left an hour before me.
Well, true. That is true. So the stage, obviously, is done now. Jakob Fuglsang was the winner, as predicted by Daniel when he saw the makeup of that group. Theo Gegenhart, second after finishing third yesterday. Luis Leon Sanchez, third. And James Knox, fourth, which moved him up to 11th on GC. No changes, really, on GC. Rafał Majka moved up to fifth. Nairo Quintana, another bad day for him, slipped down to sixth. But still Roglic in the red. Big change today was King of the Mountains. Geoffrey Bouchard is in the King of the Mountains jersey. Finally, Angel Madrazo is out of that. Theo Gegenhart is actually up to third in King of the Mountains. Quite a surprise, isn't it? Bouchard, he's been on the attack. He's been up the road a lot, though.
And how many points is Hart's deficit? Gegenhart's deficit?
Is he Hart? Do we call him Hart?
Theo Hart. TGH.
He's got 29 points. Bouchard's got 50, which sounds like quite a lot.
Theo is in the shake-up, isn't he? If with the two mountain stages we've got to come, multiple climbs on those days. They're the kind of days that aspiring kings of the mountains will look at and say, I have to be in the break that day. So who knows? It's all open, isn't it?
Still open. Who's leading the team classification, though, Daniel?
Astana?
Movistar. Unlucky. Listen, at the summit, I spoke to a few riders to get their impressions of that climb, the first time the race has been up there, as we just said earlier. Here's what a few of them said. We're going to hear from, in order, Nathan van Hooijdonk of CCC, Sam Bewley of Mitchelton Scott, Mitch Docker of EF Education First, and George Bennett of Jumbo-Visma. What did you think of the climb? First time the Vuelta's been up here.
Pretty gradual, not too steep. Like, I liked it.
Do you enjoy it? I mean, can you enjoy it?
Yeah, maybe if the sun was shining, then I would enjoy it a little more.
It was all right. It was long, but it wasn't so hard. Problem is, it's 30k to the bus now.
Yeah,
that's the main problem with coming up here.
Did you have a chance to enjoy it at all?
No, I'm not enjoying anything of this race. No, it was all right. It was a pretty nice climb. Yeah, lots to look at. We're going pretty easy in a big group, so it's plenty to see.
Worth it for the Haribos in there.
Yeah, exactly.
It was nice because it wasn't ridiculously steep.
It was ridiculously long, though. Did it not feel very long?
Didn't matter because it wasn't steep. I'm sick of going up steep climbs.
So you're a fan then?
Yeah, because it wasn't steep. That's all I can say. Thank God it wasn't just like 28%.
It was awesome. I loved it. So I mean, just so beautiful here. You know, every time we come to Asturias, it's like they find some new climb, and I'm always suffering and want to just get to the bus. But you also look around and go, shit, it's so beautiful here. But it's kind of off the radar as well. You know, it's not like people come to Spain and go to Benidorm. Like, what are they doing? Come here. It's so beautiful. I loved it. I hope this becomes a staple, just because it's, you know, I hope people come here and discover it. And I think this is some of the most like underrated climbs in the world around here. Hopefully we come here more often.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Grafia or Grafias?
Depends where you are in Spain, really, where you either do or don't hear the S, but the S is always there.
Thanks very much to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. Those S's are there and should be recorded when you enter the code SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. Cheers, Daniel.
Well, this is the kind of glass I like to see, Rich. A goblet. I'm a big fan of a goblet for a beer. It's quite, and we were quite dismayed to learn that most of the beer in this particular bar, which is recommended by our colleague Andy Hood, who lives in León, has lived here for years, was Amstel. But this was not Amstel.
No, this is a nice rust-coloured sort of. Hey, you were looking for a red beer last night, weren't you? That's slightly redder. The stage, Daniel.
Can we talk a bit more about León's nightlife first?
Sure.
It's very good. It's nice, as you would say, the nightlife. León is Granada supposedly has the best nightlife in inland from the coastal area. So we've been told by our colleague Fran Reyes on a number of occasions. Andy Hood might have confirmed that himself. And León is supposedly the Granada of the north.
Well, it's very nice. We've been here a few times. It's a Monday night, though, so I'm not sure there'll be a lot of nightlife tonight. It feels quite quiet, but it's a big university city, is it not?
I think it is.
So the stage, won by Jakob Fuglsang. Strong performance from Astana today. Does that mean they've given up on Miguel Angel Lopez, or was it get the guys in the break and you never know what might happen?
I didn't think they've given up on him. I mean, I asked Fuglsang that this morning, and he, as you would expect, denied that was the case. But I think definitely a window of opportunity has creaked further open for him in the last few days. He always wanted to win a stage here, but if Miguel Angel Lopez had been in contention for the win, I think Fuglsang would have had a harder time persuading his director sportifs that he could get away in a breakaway. Although, you know, it's often very much part of Astana's strategy, isn't it? And, you know, a bit like we saw with Sepkus yesterday, that guy down the road on a mountain stage can serve one of two purposes, can't he? He can be there for the leader should he need him later in the stage, or he can go for the stage win. And quite often, the guy who is sent down the road gets away maybe doing a little bit less work. I'm not saying that's the case today, but they can always point to, you know, their guy back in the peloton and say, well, I'm not contributing as much as you other guys.
Well, we'll hear from James Knox's diary earlier on. They had a lot of riders up there in that break, and so there was a lot of other teams using that to, you know, the pressure was on them really to drive that break, and I'm sure that did give other teams and riders a slightly easier day. Fuglsang afterwards talked a little bit about the World Championships. Hugo Kurvitz asked him about that, and that seems to be a race that he fancies. He's obviously in great form this year, but he seems to know a bit about the course, and he wouldn't mind bad weather. But he said that he's never ridden well at the World Championships, but he's up for it.
What about Rog and the Worlds? I meant to ask him this today, but didn't really get the opportunity. Have you heard anything about that, Rich?
I imagine the time trial would be a big target of his, and he actually is my favourite for the time trial.
He's also doing the relay. What is that? What we call it? The relay.
The team time trial, mixed team time trial. Was there a moment today when Rog looked in a little bit of trouble, or was it all under control?
No.
He was off the back a little bit. Pog had a good day today, didn't he?
Pog was expected to go well today, I think, because of the temperature. He likes the colder temperatures. It was pretty chilly up there, wasn't it? And also, it was a climb where the riders were able to pick up quite a lot of speed. I imagine they did quite long sections of it in the big ring. Would that be inaccurate to say? Actually, you know, I was discussing this with a few people, the finish. You know, we all sort of salivate and drool at the prospect of these super steep, often quite remote, newly discovered climbs that the Vuelta has become synonymous with, and we're often disappointed by the spectacle on the day itself, and there is something about a fast climb which A, lends itself to bigger time gaps, and also looks very dynamic on the TV. You know, you are watching the best riders in the world, and there is part of you that wants to see them looking so they're going pretty fast. And
well, that was not a steep, particularly steep climb, very long today.
That's what
you mean. There was a bit of beef today as well, Daniel. Jumbo Visma riders talking at the end about Roglic stopping for a pee. I think EF Education First were fingered for this, for attacking while Roglic was answering a call of nature. Let's hear at the finish from yesterday's stage runner Sepp Kuss and then his Jumbo Visma teammate George Bennett. Sepp, how was it today after your efforts yesterday?
Yeah, I actually felt pretty good today. Yeah, even from the start, it felt pretty decent. But I think EF or somebody attacked while Primoz was pissing once the break had gone, which was, yeah, I think they got dropped from the group anyway, so it didn't matter. But yeah, that was a bit of an effort to get back up to the front after that. Then some teams were attacking because we were all behind with Primoz just having a pee break. So, but yeah, we regrouped and it was all right. Just rode steady until this last climb, and then Astana took over.
What did you make of that climb? First time the Vuelta has been up here.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was a long, long grind, but yeah, pretty cool up here. I'm glad it's not raining. Yeah, it was maybe easier on the second to last climb than we expected, but yeah, the guys did a great job just riding a good pace. We don't need to bring every break back, we can ride it pretty controlled and then see what happens in the end, kind of thing. It's fun hearing my name on the side of the road and everything like that, so yeah, always good to have nice fans. I actually felt pretty good, and it's a good climb for me, but yeah, I didn't quite have the acceleration maybe after yesterday, but I was able to, you know, come back a few times and just ride a tempo for him. But yeah, the once he went away attacking, then it was just a smaller group, so it was all right. No, there's a lot of hard days to come, and yeah, we really have to stay focused.
Race is a race. I mean, they can do it how they want, and I'm not going to be one to... I mean, I was pretty dark on them in the race, mainly because I had to do a 5-minute full gas effort to bring Roglic to the front and then reversed out the back of the bunt. I wasn't stoked at the time, but you know, whatever, if that's I'm not going to hold a grudge or get upset about it. And luckily we had numbers and strength to mitigate it, and the guys that attacked didn't even get in the breakaway. So cycling's changed, you know. From what I heard, it used to be one guy at the front of the bunch handing out tickets saying how many guys can go in the breakaway, and now it's just a free-for-all and whatever. You have to be prepared for it, and makes good TV, I guess. It took me a while to get back to the front, actually, see, so I don't know who kicked it off, but yeah, definitely spiced things up there and gave me a good 20 minutes of suffering.
George, has there been any moments in this race where the team hasn't felt as though it's got everything under control? It hasn't really looked like it. You've never really let things slip out of your control.
Probably about 8k into the prologue. I think we were pretty out of control there, sliding into a barrier. But apart from that, I think it's been all right. Personally, I've been struggling, obviously, a bit in the last 4 or 5 days, hopefully with a rest day and finish antibiotics, and then hopefully an easier day after the rest day should be pretty good for the last couple of days.
That was Sepp Kuss and George Bennett. I asked Sepp Kuss a follow-up question because the big question overnight on the Cycling Podcast Facebook discussion group was what had Sepp Kuss drunk? There was a desire for video evidence of Sepp Kuss downing almost in one a bottle of beer on the podium yesterday. So I asked him about that and whether he had managed to notice what percentage of alcohol the beer had. Here's what he said. A lot of attention for drinking the beer on stage and pretty much in a oneer. Did you happen to see how strong it was?
Oh, well, after I drank it, they told me it was alcohol-free. I was like, oh, no wonder it was so easy to put back. So, and that's all right. We had some normal strength beers at the hotel.
So Sepp Kuss a little bit disappointed there.
I got a relevant point about Sepp Kuss and beer. Sepp Kuss was the one who revealed to me and I think other journalists during the Giro that Rog enjoys a beer of an evening. I also subsequently heard at the Giro that it wasn't beer that Rog was mainly drinking, it was red wine.
Beer and red wine?
Possibly beer, red wine, tequila slammers at the end of the night. And I asked, and I wonder whether Sepp Kuss regretted telling me that, because I asked him again at this race whether Rog was persisting with his ritual of downing these huge steins of beer after every stage, and he was slightly non-committal.
Well, these are the big questions, aren't they? We've got to get, you know, we've really got to get to the bottom of Roglic's drinking habits and Wout Poels' obsession with Brexit. That's my big task. Apparently, Wout Poels follows Brexit absolutely religiously.
And Pog's literary choices. Is Pog, how far through The Godfather? Is Pog, is he going to finish it? Will he finish it before the end of Vuelta?
Well, let's hear from our audio diarist, Nick Schultz of Mitchelton Scott and James Knox of De Koninck Quickstep, who, as I said earlier, had a very good day today.
Stage 16 done and into the rest day. Ah, great feeling. It's been a really, really hard week here. And it was finished off with a really hard stage. Another really hard start. It was kicking on for ages. and then, yeah, just more of the same. Jumbo riding a hard tempo. Just to sort of weaken everybody, I guess, and show their strength until we got to the final climb where it was essentially do a little bit of a job and then ride up there. Super, super long, but actually not that hard. Just a constant 6% and pretty easy to get up. It was nice, though, getting to the line and seeing Noxie start riding back down after a brilliant fourth place. Really great to see him right up there. He's just been chipping away and getting closer and closer every time, and couldn't be happier for him. And I've also seen it's moved him right up there on GC, just tapping on the top 10, so that's awesome. As far as plans go for tomorrow, nothing much planned aside from spending as much time horizontal as possible, staying in bed, most likely staying indoors. I heard a whiff that it might be actually raining tomorrow in Burgos, but fingers crossed we get a bit of sun. It'd be nice to go out for a ride and have a coffee and just relax. It'll be doing as little as possible tomorrow, and trying to have a good catch up with my girlfriend on FaceTime or something like that, and otherwise not too much. Relax, sleep, and eat. It's gonna be a good day. In response to a question from a listener about how it works on the final climb or on the mountain days, they noticed I've been in small groups but not in the group pedo. My job is I'm kind of in medium support role for the pure climbers, or for the GC guys. That means is just trying to help them out with position, making sure they aren't having to carry excess biddens or food. Basically just trying to make their day as easy as possible for as long as possible to an extent. Sometimes that might mean that before the last climb, if I'm on a bad day, I'll sit up and ride in at my own pace. Or it might mean I go into the final climb and sort of hang on for the first few K of the climb, just to sort of get them through the messy section, essentially, making sure that I'm there if there is any sort of a bingle or a mechanical problem at that period. After that, it's literally putting the handbrake in on and going as easy as possible. So, I mean, that can mean losing 15 minutes to 20 minutes in one climb. Sometimes the gruppetto even nearly catches me, and the gruppetto may have formed on the climb before. On other days, when I'm not having a good one, I'll also be riding in the gruppetto, as we all have days like that. Basically, I'm there to support the GC guys for as long as possible while thinking about days to come. So not going too far into the red zone that I'm going to be completely cooked and written off for what's to come, but managing that load and trying to sort of use my energy wisely throughout the period of whatever the stage race is. So here, that's 3 weeks. I hope that gives you a bit of insight into what I do, and personally I think a great role, and I really enjoy doing it.
Just had to check because losing track now, but that's stage 16 done. Really, really special day out front for me today. Right in the mix, got in a move of 4 after maybe 30 kilometres. Me and Cavagna and Padun and Segler of FDJ, and we were just going full gas, trying to keep the gap. And then another 20 guys, I think, came from behind with Phil and Max. This was it, this was the break. So great to have finally made the break. even if I spent some pennies doing so. But yeah, it was good to be up front today. Really, really nice to be back ahead of affairs. It's a different style of racing and it's something I love anyway. So four guys, we had sort of had a plan to commit to the stage win straight away. So we did our bit riding in the group, keeping it controlled, trying to set a good tempo and get everyone working. And you know, obviously it was up to the bunch how much of a gap they gave us, and we were lucky today that they were happy to let us go, and we had a good gap anyway. So took the last descent in the front, kind of like that. It's just sort of better than being in the wheels. It's just easier, and ended up splitting the group apart a bit unintentionally, but felt comfortable, sort of on the limit, but without taking full risk, or any risk actually. I could see the motorbikes taking the corners, so then you sort of get an idea of what's coming. Set the brake into a different dynamic, and then we jumped around for a bit, having Phil, the old fox, playing it smart, being on the front of everything, made it easy for us. Me and Remy behind, we could just sort of surf and came across following wheels, trying to save as much as we could and letting other guys waste energy. And then when it sort of neutralized itself, Remy did a huge turn, and at this point we sort of completely committed to trying to set me up for the stage win. Followed Lewis on Sanchez's attack, but it was in a hard attack, and then he rode, you know, kept on riding on the limit, and I feeling my legs, and then sort of hesitated or was trying to drop back down the group, and Fuglsang went, and that was me. I couldn't go with it. I mean, it was a difficult situation with guys on my wheel sort of refusing to work with me because they knew I was in a decent GC position, namely Teo and Luis Leon Sanchez, and then Brambio when I caught him. It's kind of a hard situation to be because, you know, I wasn't trying to, the main ambition wasn't just GC, that was just going to come with it, but we wanted to win the stage. But then when you've got everyone looking at you because they're all hearing from their DSs that I'm the highest placed GC rider, it kind of makes it hard, you know. It's a hard dynamic, and we had the bodies as well, so everyone was looking at us a bit. We had to make sure we were always present, and we had to do the majority of the work, you know. A lot of guys sitting in the back skipping turns all day, and then we still got rid of them in the end, so sort of demonstrates how strong we were today. But in the end, I wasn't strong enough to finish it off, so a bit disappointed not to finish it off after everyone sacrificed themselves for me. But you know, really proud of the way everyone got behind me, and it's nice to jump up the GC a bit as well. I'm in the car now, heading to Burgos. Got a rest day coming up, feels like a well-earned one. Don't really have any plans yet, but I'll be putting my feet up, trying to get as much recovery in as possible. Hopefully I made for some good entertainment on the telly today. Nice to be there in the front.
That was Nick Schultz and James Knox, our audio diarist. Another really fascinating insight, especially I should say that Nick was answering a question there from a listener who asked him about his job in the race and where he finishes in the group, the listener being Steve Caldwell. So thanks for your questions, Steve, and if any of you have got questions for James or Nick, please tweet them directly. They're both on Twitter, or you can tweet the Cycling Podcast, cycling_podcast. Tomorrow is our press day episode. I think we've got a few questions for that. If you've got any, you can still call them in, I believe. The number is +44 7971 338 205. So, Daniel, we're going to get some food here. It's quite late, isn't it? It's 10 o'clock.
Some tippy tapas, aren't we? He's looking. You're not a big fan of tippy tapas, are you?
I like tapas, but I like something substantial as well.
Well, we're staying in a lovely wine hotel tomorrow night, Rich. I think it's got a restaurant as well, so we'll be having some Ribera del Duero. So tomorrow, between the rest day, the decathlon day, and the following day stage, we're in the south of the Rioja region, and then we're moving on to Ribera del Duero, so it should be a treat.
Well, the last week looks really nice from a hotel's point of view, which coincidentally is when Lionel Burney comes back out to join us. We'll be hooking up with him on Wednesday. But that's all for tonight. Thank you very much, Daniel. Before we go, quick thank you to some friends of the podcast. Thanks very much to Gary Hadfield, Darren Mar Elia, Henry Taylor, Bob Berry, Brett Matthews, and Matt Levasseur.
Martin Spencer, Stefan Meyer, Michelle Finker, Justin Froome. Should that have been Justin Finke and Michelle Froome? Who knows? Samuel Hayes. Samuel. That's not how you pronounce it in English, is it? Samuel.
Samuel.
Samuel Hayes, Dominic Comfrey, and Keith Black.
Thanks all. Good night.